The work.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is going to be the mini show for the month of June 2021. How's it going, guys? You guys good?
Well enough. Okay over here.
We didn't really chit-chat before we started recording. We just kind of jumped into it here.
It's true, yeah.
Everything's good. Mm-hmm. Wes, how's the Pokemon card sales going now that you're back into it?
Oh, Hershey Bar from Mel.
Always before we press record. You're like, oh, he's about to press record. Let me stuff my face every time.
Yep. I mean, they're going fine. I mean, I'm not dealing with them.
Okay.
They keep putting them. We have go backs. So when people find stuff in their department that doesn't go in their department, we take them up front. And then you can get the stuff that's for your department and blah, blah, blah. Go on go backs. They keep poking Pokemon cards in my go backs. They're not mine. I don't touch them. I don't sell them. They go in toys. I don't want them, but they keep giving them to me.
Interesting. So do you still have, like, people, like...
No, everybody's been very quiet about it. I haven't heard anything crazy about the ordeal or anything. Everybody's been kind of...
Oh, is the bubble bursting?
Maybe
the bubble's bursting.
We can only hope.
I think, if anything, it's probably gone underground. You know, it's probably more like they're planning some sort of, you know, January 6th type scenario, but at all of the different locations.
Oh, like some sort of Target insurrection?
I think so.
Maybe. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're just going to storm the place.
Start wearing some body armor to work, Wes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I already wear a cup.
No. Understandable. but that's just for bathroom purposes, so you don't have to actually go to the bathroom. Just like...
Yeah. And containment. Like, the cups have this wide curve to it.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, just...
Yeah.
Regular briefs just don't cut anymore.
How about you? Everything good with you, Ryan?
Things are okay. Yeah, I really feel like I don't have much to report. Like, if this is like the status report of what's going on in my world, I'll tell you, not a whole lot.
Okay.
I'm good.
everything going smoothly.
Yeah. I'm getting tan as fuck. I've been swimming outdoors a lot because I swim laps almost every day. So now I go outside and swim in the Florida heat, and it's like 95 degrees. And
like 9 a.m.
Sun doesn't quit, man. It's up there all day, every day.
Sure. Where are you swimming?
The Y.
Oh.
They have outdoor laps, which is pretty cool.
Everything feels like in the morning, the sun feels the most intense. Yep. Like, once it gets to, like, 4 and 5 p.m., when it's, like, actually the hottest, I don't know what it is, but it doesn't feel as intense. But, like, 9 a.m., like, walking into work, it's fucking brutal.
I usually swim at, like, 3 in the afternoon. So it is sort of, like, peak Florida summer, but, you know, I'm getting in the water. And the water is, like, actually pretty warm. It's, like, in the low 80s, which is wild if you think about it. Like, you know, your Olympic swimming pool, I believe, is held at 66 degrees.
That's chilly.
Yeah, it's very chilly for swimmers. But, like, in your normal indoor temp on a pool for competitive swimming is usually somewhere between, like, 75, like, around 75, at least from what I hear. I'm not an expert swimmer.
All right.
I've only picked this up recently. It was actually kind of funny when I was there today, like, you know, one of the, because there always has to be, like, a lifeguard outside that looks after everything. So then, like, one of the staff members comes up and is like, it's like, hey, you need anything? And he's like, yeah, water. And there was, like, a half-second pause. He's like, and a popsicle. And I was like, that's funny. And then sure enough, she came back out and gave him both a water bottle and a popsicle.
Nice.
I was like, they know what they're doing. I mean, I guess if you're stuck outside in the Florida heat all day.
Yeah.
Gotta live a little.
Actually, your dog is like chewing on something back here.
All right, hang on a second. All right, now that Sherlock's done being a turd.
Yeah.
I went up to one of the natural springs, Wakawa Springs. Yesterday, actually, brought the girls up there in the morning for a couple hours.
How's it with the alligators?
There are no alligators in there.
You sure?
Positive. They monitor it very closely, and they don't allow alligators where people swim.
Because Jeremy went camping there once, and there was alligators making noises in the middle of the night.
Well, yeah, there's probably alligators in the general area. They don't allow them in the swimming areas. Mm. And, of course, you got to realize that the alligators, like, you get a bunch of humans in one place, and the alligators are like, we're just going to stay the fuck away from there. We don't want anything to do with them. Yeah. But, yeah, we didn't stay all that long. What brought me to this point was, like, the water there is about, like, 72 degrees year-round in the
natural springs. Yeah, it's spring bud, so it's going to be, like, a steady temp.
Yeah, yeah. But then we got there like 9 in the morning. We only ended up staying till like 10:30, 11, because the girls were getting hungry, so we had to bail. Which is fine. I think it was more than enough time to watch them swim around. But they're usually pretty quiet at that time of day. But, you know, once it started getting to about like 10:30, like these summer camp groups are coming in. And there is like this really fucking, like, the guy just got under my skin immediately because he was like this hipster camp counselor, shaved head, long beard, and he was like directing traffic with all the children. And there was this soft-shelled turtle swimming in the water. Mm-hmm. This guy was swimming with everybody, leaving everybody alone. Nobody was making a big deal out of it. This group of kids with their camp counselor comes in. They start screaming and yelling about how it's a snapping turtle and how it's going to bite them. And this camp counselor guy took it upon himself several times to fish the turtle out of the water and hold it up. It's not a snapping turtle. And then, like, shake it around a little bit before he put it back. And, motherfucker, don't grab the turtle. Leave it the fuck alone, you douche.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Then Ripley got scared of the turtle because he was making a big deal out of it. Mm. Before he started picking it up, she was just fine with it being there.
He was probably just high anyways.
One would have to be.
It's hard to manage with those children.
That much time with children. That sounds horrific.
Yeah. To live life with that cue ball and that beard.
Yeah.
You gotta be on something.
So, yeah, that was our day yesterday. I also bought a new backplate and kickstand for my Switch. I'd bought a new kickstand because my original one broke over a year ago at this point. And the new one I got, it wasn't great. So it never really closed or opened properly. And it ended up cracking the back of my original backplate. So a couple months back, I bought a new backplate and replaced it. But it didn't come with new screws. So I had to use all the original screws to the backplate. Yeah. And in between, like, taking off the kickstand once and then taking off the back plate again, the screws are getting a little bit worn in. So I was like, I should replace these screws at some point. And also the original back plate that I was replacing the first time, when I got it off, I had accidentally unplugged the micro SD card reader from the actual board of the Switch. So when I got it all back together and I turned it on, none of my games were downloaded. I was like, oh my god, I fucked it up. I fucked up my Switch. It's dead forever. So I had to, like, open it back up and re-plug the thing back in. But at this point, all of the screws are in not great condition anymore. So I ended up just the other day buying a new backplate that actually comes with screws and a new kickstand. So I'm going to replace all that. And also, I found some, like, new screens that you can replace, which is slightly more complicated, but not that much more complicated than replacing a backplate and a kickstand. It's just, you know, the inverse side. You have to take off, like, the housing around the sides. Mm-hmm. So there are more screws to undo, and you have to keep track of which screw goes where. But I bring that up to ask you guys this. Is it still my Switch? Or is this, like, the bicycle situation?
Oh, my God. I think it still performs the same task, the same function. Therefore, it is your Switch. I think the question is, you're made of the same matter as everything else in the universe. Why do you get to assign any other matter as you're the owner of it?
We're all just stardust. Yeah. Am I my Switch in a cosmic sense because we're made of the same stuff?
You absolutely are. On a long enough timeline, you and that Switch will become one.
Oh, my goodness.
And were at one point if you go back far enough.
Yeah. And you know, in the huge scale of the cosmos, I have spent much more time, like, the atoms of my body were one with the atoms of my Switch far longer than we've been separate, and then will be one again far longer than we've been together.
What the fuck is in the Hershey bar?
There is only a microcosm, cosmically speaking, of time where my Switch and I are separate, and I look forward to us being together again.
Yeah, it'll be great. But now you're N64, though.
No. Fuck that.
I can F right off.
But yeah, no, I think as long as, like, the motherboard, the thing that, like, actually is the Switch, like, once I, like, if I get around to replacing the screen someday, it's a little bit more dancing the line, but the Switch is, like, the hardware that's in there. It's not the screen.
Do you need to replace the screen?
It's an original launch Switch, so there are, you know, a handful of those where it actually scrapes against the dock when you bring it in and out, so it puts scratches along the edges of it.
You know what the thing is that you probably have the most ownership of and agency on is the actual, like, game itself. Like, that your actual save files are what's most important.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah. As long as those are intact, then, like, that's the thing that matters, you know? Like, the entire hardware could be replaced, but as long as the information exists,
yeah,
that's That's the crucial part of it.
I just bought a screen protector. I mean, I don't...
I generally don't like... I mean, in hindsight, if I had known that I'd gotten one of those switches that scrapes the edges like that, I would have gotten a screen protector. But in general, I don't like using screen protectors.
Why? Works fine.
I can never get it on there right. I don't know. I always know it's on there.
It's against his religion.
Yeah, it's religion.
Well, if
yeah.
you put the new screen on and you want a screen protector, you know, I'll put it on for you.
In Leviticus, it says not to use them, so...
Right, yeah.
But, well, I live a life of sin, so I mean, that's just
how
it is.
Yeah. We know this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You and I are one more than you and your Switch were.
No, same amount. Anyway, what were you even talking about? Oh,
well, we're talking about how the Red Sox swept the Yankees recently.
Yeah, you know, and that felt good.
For a hot minute, and then now they've lost a couple.
They lost
to the cheaters, to the fucking cheateriest cheaters that ever cheated.
They lost two badly the past couple days to the Astros, and they lost 3 out of 4 to the Astros just last week, and that doesn't feel good because, you know, at this point, like, my expectations are higher for the Red Sox than they were at the beginning of the season because they've been playing well, except against the Astros. And if they get to October, they're going to bump into the Astros, so... They keep on losing these series to the cheaters, to those trash bangers, and...
Yep. How are they cheating?
They're not cheating, well...
They're not cheating anymore, though.
They might still be cheating.
Well, they're probably putting shit on the ball like the Yankees do.
That's what fucking a ton of people do, apparently.
Yeah, that's true.
So what they would do is... all right, let's back up. Let's back way the fuck up for you guys. There's a pitcher in baseball. He throws a ball to a catcher.
Yes, and they put things on their fingers to either cause it more spin, or what they were doing recently was like glue, and so it sticks on their finger more.
Some sort of adhesive.
He's in the loop. The pitch bot over here.
Yeah. Well, I've been watching John Boy videos.
They put tacky substance on their person somewhere so they can smear it on their fingers. So they can get a tighter grip on the ball to make it spin more. It spins more. You get later movement, so it like slides or spins out of the way. So you miss bats more. And the catcher will, like, throw down his fingers and give signals, like, this is the pitch you should go with next. It's the catcher who's mostly calling the pitches that the pitcher is throwing. The pitcher can sometimes say, like, no, I don't want to throw that, and the catcher will change his mind, but it's up to the two of them to manage it. But if you can decipher, like, what the hand signals that the catcher means, that they're throwing down, what those mean, you can predict what pitchers are coming.
Yeah. So if you had a guy on second base, for example, so you had a runner on second who can kind of watch the catcher as he's making these things, if the guy on second base can decipher what those symbols mean, he could just relay it to the batter, like, hey, it's going to be an off-speed pitch.
How's that cheating, though?
That is not.
That's good sportsmanship.
That's called stealing signs, and while, you know, teams will get mad at you, like, if you do it, it's not that they're mad at that you figured it out. It's that they're mad that it's happening, and then they have to change up the signals that they're doing. Like, there are a lot of teams that will have, like, multiple signals for the same thing, and they'll change it up depending if they think their signs are being stolen. What the Astros were doing was they were deciphering the code using video playback. They would have people, you know, down in the locker rooms and stuff watching video, saying like of television broadcasts, saying, okay, well, this sign means this, and this sign means this, relaying that back to the dugout.
During the game.
During the game.
Oh.
And then what the players in the dugout would do is if there was going to be a pitch that was going to be like a curveball, something off-speed, something that's not a fastball, they'd then bang on a trash can to let the batter know, like, hey, maybe don't swing at this.
Yeah. And it didn't even stop at that, too. They actually got to the point where they were taping buzzers onto their skin.
Allegedly. But they definitely were. But allegedly.
Yeah, why else do you think he's like, don't take my shirt off, don't take my shirt off? Who screams that?
That was so ridiculous. Like, yeah, he this guy hits a home run, like a game-winning home run, game-winning hit, something like that. And he's, like, rounding the bases and, like, of course, it's like a game-winning thing, so everyone's going to, like, charge home plate and, like, celebrate and stuff. And he's, like, screaming at him as he's running the bases, don't take off my shirt. Don't take off my shirt. And everyone's like, why does he care if they take his shirt off? And, like, he decided to tell everyone, like, oh, I got a new tattoo and I didn't want my wife to see it. Like, but if you're saying this now she fucking knows you're up to something. And he was up to something, allegedly, but definitely.
So they're, like, pinging the buzzards and...
Yeah, like, just give him, like, a little ping in the buzzer, like it was going to be, like, a certain type of pitch or something.
Yeah. The idea is that, I guess, they just want fastballs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fastballs is a standard pitch. It's going to come at a...
It's going right at the middle. Yeah.
So.
And you
but
know,
you've been watching your John Boy videos. Did you watch the one that was called something like Randy Johnson is a cartoon villain?
I want to now. I have not, but I want to now.
It's this great. He just digs up an old video. There's this guy, Randy Johnson, who's like probably, you know, 7.5 feet tall. He's just, he's probably like six.
He's 8 feet tall.
Yeah.
He's 100 pounds.
he has the mustache that twirls, you know.
Oh my God.
And he is built. He is jacked.
He looks like he could be anywhere from like 35 years old to 70 years old.
Yeah. He's like Daniel Day-Lewis from There Will Be Blood. If he worked out too much. Like, this guy looks like just a fucking monster. And he goes out there, and like they're showing him, and he's just like, he basically has to come out and get one guy out. And like, he just throws it, and you can tell the batter's like afraid of this thing. It's like, if you watch the way it's set up, it's just, he looks so evil. And he's a man that's never smiled in his life. So he is just looking down. And the best part is that like, he's now got him 0-2. One of them, he swings and almost falls down the batter. But he's got him like in a 0-2. And then the catcher starts giving him some signals like, I mean, do we want to? And he just like stares at him, and he's like, kind of goes to try another signal. And then he's just like, he just gives him this look, and then the catcher just runs up to the thing and talks to him for a second, and then just goes back, and he's just like, okay. He's like, I'm going right down the fucking middle with 190 mile an hour fastball.
I dare you. I'll do to you what I did to that bird.
Right. Oh yeah, this is the guy that killed a bird.
He killed a bird. Not like intentionally. He like threw a pitch, and crazy coincidence, bird happened to be flying by between the mound and the batter.
Oh my God.
And he pegged the bird, and there's just like this explosion of feathers. And of course the bird is fucking dead. But yeah. Jesus. Yeah. Crazy fucking coincidence. Or was it?
It's like when Fabio got hit in the face with a bird.
Except better.
Yeah, except even better.
Anyway.
Wait, what were we talking about?
I don't even...
We're talking about my Switch.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and how I was going to replace the screen. But now, like, I don't know if I'm going to replace the screen at some point, because... I don't know. Who knows, like, what they do with the Switch in the future? You know, but you know what they're not doing, though, is the Switch Pro. Yeah. It's definitely not... Do you guys see all the rumors the past couple of weeks? Oh, my God, it was everywhere. Yeah, there was a thing all over, like, the Twitter version of the internet where some people were on there like, oh yeah, they're announcing it today. Like today. And that was like last Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And then everyone was all over Twitter. It's like, oh yeah, definitely. I think it was Bloomberg that first like sent out the thing like, oh, Nintendo's got the Switch Pro ready. They're going to announce it today. And then people started jumping on the bandwagon like, oh yeah, we're hearing today too. That's exactly what we've heard.
It's not April, right?
No, it is not. It is June, and this was happening. I think it was the tail end of May.
No, it sounds like an April Fool's joke.
And then, like, of course, it didn't happen. And then they moved the goalposts. Like, oh, it didn't happen.
Like that gee, that's awkward. Like when it, like a doomsday cult, the day hits and nothing happens. But they're like, oh, well, if you just move the zero here, we got it wrong a little bit. Mm. It's like a year and a half from now.
They moved the goalpost, and it's like, oh well, it didn't happen today, but it's probably going to happen next week. And now we're a week removed from that. Yeah. And you know, the people treat it with like it's such gospel, like it's a foregone conclusion because Bloomberg said something, as if Bloomberg is some sort of bastion of truth that can never be wrong.
God, I hope he just made up. Just to fuck with people.
There was this guy on. I listened to a podcast. And they had this guy in, Jason Schreier, and he's done some really great reporting about the sort of toxic work culture in the video game industry, things like mistreatment of women or people of color in the video game industry, and the sort of work environment around like working people to death and really working them to the bone.
You know why they called them Team 17, right?
I did not.
Strictly underage.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I got to employ children.
Total creeps.
And of course, children are cheaper, you know?
Yeah.
You don't have to pay them as much. So it makes
you
sense.
Pay them?
I mean, if you want to keep them showing up, like after a few months, they'll catch on. Like we should be getting money for our work.
He just makes it so that the doors lock from the outside.
That's how Wes handles his children.
Hey, they're not going to get wet in the rain anymore.
So, he went on this RPG podcast. And it was like the day that it was all supposed to go down, and he spoke with such certainty, like, oh yeah, my colleagues at Bloomberg, that's where he works. They said it's happening. They really study like the supply line stuff of this. They know what's going on. It's definitely being announced today. And then it didn't happen, of course. And you know, even if you have like correct information about like a supply line, like Nintendo bought screens from Samsung or whatever it was, like they're buying these high resolution screens, it's not really, I don't think it's correct to draw a conclusion like this is going to be for hardware they're going to release. They bought screens. We don't know how many. Could be for R&D. It could be stuff that they're prototyping. We don't know what is going to happen until Nintendo announces something. Will Nintendo do a Switch Pro or a different iteration of the Switch? Maybe. But I think it's foolish to just go ahead and say, like, oh, yeah, this is definitely happening, and treating it like a foregone conclusion. And I don't think they will, personally.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that the best news that circulates for Nintendo is when they talk about the game releases that they have and what's coming out. I don't think it's really a hardware thing. Like, for as much as I heard people talk so much about the new Xbox consoles and like PlayStation consoles, I don't really hear people talk about the fucking games that they play on them. It's weird
because there's not much for the new consoles just yet. It's early in the life cycle, so
there is an
enthusiast audience that gets really hyped over just new hardware announcements. Like, those people exist. But I don't know.
The new stuff right now is still coming out with the same games, but they're still doing PS4 releases with it right now. So it's still...
Yeah, what's that one? Horizon Into the West? Like, that's a really interesting looking game coming on both PS4 and PS5. I'm sure it'll be better on PS5 in certain respects, but like, it's a game that you can still get on the system you already own.
Yeah. And I just saw a trailer today for a game that they just announced, and boom, PS4 ran the bottom of it.
Yep.
So, I mean...
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about one. It's actually the top game of your highlight reel that you just sent us. It's literally hitting every console imaginable.
Yeah, so I sent... I do want to cover a few game announcements before we actually get into E3, because there'll be even more game announcements, so I wanted to clear the deck a little bit. So the one you're talking about is Crisis Remastered Trilogy. And that one's coming out this fall to Switch as well as other systems.
It's been a long-running trope for a while. It's like, when people talk about their PCs, but it's like, but can it run Crisis on max settings?
Right.
You know?
And, you know, a Crisis
Remastered... Which isn't even to say that the game looks that good. It just says that it's so suboptimally designed. I'm kidding. No, it looks majestic if you ever watch those old Crisis games run on top-of-the-line PCs. They're gorgeous.
Yeah. And
I have a buddy years ago who had one of those, and he was so proud of his computer. I'm like, all right. But you mostly play Minecraft.
and it will be out of date in about 4 months.
Yep.
But I wasn't aware that Crisis Remastered, just the first one apparently, was already out on Switch. Like, that game already exists. And now, here's the trilogy. I don't know if there's going to be any sort of extras or anything, but hey, there's three games.
I played a bit of one. It's fine.
It's a shooty shooter?
Yeah, it's a shooty shooter.
Okay.
Different abilities for your suit you unlock. Like, I can't remember.
There's like invisibility and stuff.
Yeah, invisibility. I think there's like a brief strength boost.
You get a gun, and you can jump.
Can you double jump?
I don't know. It's not a detective game. So maybe not.
The other one, Coromon. I'm more excited for that one. That one's out.
I'm on board. I'll try this out.
Yeah.
You guys really excited for this?
It's a Pokemon ripoff. Come on.
It's super derivative, though.
It is incredibly derivative.
It is super derivative. I'm excited to see how it turns out, whether it's good or a train wreck. I think it's going to be fun either way.
Yeah, it looks... I mean, here's the thing, is that I feel like they did nothing to make it seem not like a Pokemon ripoff. Like, I think Monster Sanctuary really did a good job of giving you the thrill of a Pokemon game by making it something that's really unlike a Pokemon game. You know, where you still get the monster collection element of it, but you've got a fun new combat system to deal with. You've got a really interesting way to deal with the overworld that's, again, more like a Metroidvania style thing. Like, this just looks carbon copy. It looks like,
I'd be interested to learn a bit more about the developers of this, because it looks like sort of a, you know, like how they do those fan mods of like a Fire Red and all that, where they or Pokemon Uranium.
Yeah, it looks like Uranium.
It looks like that sort of thing. And I'm totally down to give that a shot. It is going to be interesting to see how the battle system works. It looks very much like Pokemon. This is something about a stamina system, which makes me think that they're not leaning into like power points So we'll see how that works out. And also there's a, it seems like there's more of a customization to how you are building your stats, rather than some sort of like inherited value or effort value. You're actually able to place stats into the areas you want them to go into. But it does seem to be very much like your, you know, your attack, your defense, special attack, special defense, speed. So,
yeah. But instead of a Pokeball, we have a Beyblade.
It's true. Yeah, it's kind of mashing up both franchises there.
Yeah. And it looks like you catch them in those things that they had from Ghostbusters.
Oh, the
Ecto Tank.
There you go. But yeah, that one's out, not out till next year. So, you know, plenty of time to work through the Diamond Pearl remakes before you even think about that one.
There, I bet you they time up the release of Pokemon Arceus. Like, oh, what day you go? February 6th, huh? I think maybe that's when Arceus comes out.
We're going to have to delay that about a week. there's a few Dragon Quest games that were announced. Really only got video for one or two of them. Dragon Quest XII, Flames of Fate was announced. There was no video for that one. It was just a logo. That one's probably a long way off, as well as a game called Dragon Quest Treasures. There was video for that. I couldn't decipher what was going on. But I think that the most interesting one that is on the horizon was Dragon Quest III, and that's a remake, of course, of the NES game, which has received at least one other remake, but they are using the Octopath Traveler engine and art style to remake it, which I think is kind of cool.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that. I didn't watch that one. I just skipped it. I was like, Dragon Quest, moving on.
Yeah, I have an abusive relationship with Dragon Quest.
To be honest, the only reason why I haven't tried Dragon Quest is because our old boss. Old boss Mark liked it so much.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good enough reason.
Yeah, like, okay.
Fuck that guy.
Ooh, that guy was a tool. Oh,
he was like a human version of Garbodor, and I feel bad for saying that because Garbodor is kind of cool.
No, he's literally has had French fries in his hair. Like he has hair as long as mine. And like I've seen French fries in
thinner,
hair.
Thinner. Like you have these luxurious locks.
Yeah, mine's very thick and curly.
Yeah.
His was very thin.
His is yeah.
And then he lived like Happy and Burgers in the drawers, right?
I don't remember.
Gross stuff.
I've probably blocked all that out.
Ugh.
Sounds like a terrible human being. But he plays Dragon Quest.
Huh? But he plays Dragon Quest.
This is the thing he connects with.
And I was like, I'm not sure if I'm playing that one. He's talking to me about it. I was like, oh yeah, it's a great game. I'm going to go to my store now.
Yeah, for me,
I think the graphics look pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
They redo them and stuff.
I really dig the art style, and it was actually a bit of a curveball because if they were going to like remake these older RPGs in that style, I would have thought they would go with like a Final Fantasy. I think like Final Fantasy VI is the one that's been like the most requested for a remake in this style. But no,
I'm pretty sure that was a top comment. Like, when is this happening to Final Fantasy VI?
That'd be cool. I'd be more excited for that. But, you know, it's cool.
I'm like a super fan of these JRPGs. You really like these a lot.
I do.
Yeah, these and, like, Fire Emblem-like games are, like, John's.
But Dragon Quest has always been a bit too grindy for me.
That's saying something.
Yeah. Because I do tend to grind.
Yeah. Without protection.
With no screen protection.
Don't need protection. I'm married.
That's why he has two kids.
We just did it the two times. We're two for two.
That's it.
Super Magbot. That got announced. It's actually coming out in a couple of weeks here, June 22nd.
Yeah, this is interesting. It's a, I think they advertise like no jumping. We don't jump. It's like everything is done through this polarized magnet thing using like a sort of a grapple.
Yeah, a grapple and a rappel.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see how it is that you kind of swap between the two, because it seems like, you know, you have like your blue magnetic pole and your red, and the mechanism that you're using to grapple and repel, you're able to swap between what you're doing. So, you know, if you match up a blue, you're going to repel, or a blue with a red, you're going to attract, but then you can switch your own polarity, which I think could lead to some pretty, you know, complex platforming.
Absolutely. It looks like that's the direction this game wants to go, is to that of a very technical platformer. So
yeah, it looks interesting. It reminds me a bit of Celeste in the way that, you know, your grapples kind of end up looking like dashes, and like there are those bubbles that are kind of safe zones that you end up in, that you're able to grapple or dash into. It looks kind of cool. I forgot to write down a price. Anyway, Berserk Boy, that one's out in 2022.
I'm on board for this.
Yeah,
I'll try it out.
It looks, speaking of derivative games, looks a lot like Mega Man.
It does, is why I'm willing to try it out.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing, because somebody should make a new Mega Man game.
Yeah.
Capcom doesn't want to. Specifically, it looks a lot like Mega Man X, Yeah, it's very cool.
The animation and the environments look fantastic.
Yeah.
John said something to me about it. Go ahead.
It was about the music?
Yeah.
They're absolutely trying to emulate a Mega Man style.
Definitely.
I don't think they quite nailed the music. I'm not sure what it is about the music, but it's a little bit, maybe a little bit too bouncy is the word for it.
They probably just took existing Mega Man songs and played them backwards.
Maybe.
That's my guess.
But yeah, I think it was pretty cool. And then wrap it up with Monarch, which is a JRPG that I mostly bring it up because of the pedigree behind it. It's from a development studio that worked on a couple of the Etrian Odyssey games, as well as a couple of Shin Megami Tensei games. They worked with Atlus quite a few times with making a lot of games. The trailer is long, and they spend a lot of time going through character portraits.
Sure did. Like, I was, like, fast-forwarding, and it's only 3 minutes and 40 seconds, and I'm fast-forwarding to find actual gameplay.
Right.
I did that, too.
I don't think this was a good trailer, but I'm interested because it is from a game studio that typically makes these very, like, strategic RPGs where, you know, a lot of the moves that you're choosing in a fight matter a lot. So I'm keeping it on my radar. And it's also got like this very like occult art style to it, which I like.
It's very Japan.
Yep, sure is.
Yep.
Down to like the doctor and nurse who might have an inappropriate relationship if you made it that far into the character portraits. Well, you sure didn't.
I did.
But yeah. That's it for the game announcements until we get to the E3 stuff. What else you guys got? Got any games that you've been playing?
When is E3 stuff?
June 15th is Nintendo's E3. That's the one we care about. That was the thing about like all the Switch Pro rumors was that they're going to announce the Switch Pro before E3 so that people can announce their games that are going to be running on the Switch Pro.
That would be funny if whoever leads off like their game release stuff was just like, by the way, coming to the Switch Pro at the end of it, everybody. And just pulls out some pistols and starts firing them in the air.
You know, if anyone were to do that, it would be Square Enix, because they do have this tendency to let things slip, especially when they're talking about Dragon Quest.
Yeah.
So if they bring up Dragon Quest again, you know, hold on to your butts, because here it comes.
I beat that game I was talking about, if you're looking for a segue into some other content.
There is no game?
Yeah, I beat it.
Nice!
This is totally worth buying, you guys. This game's for real. It's really fun. It's a puzzler. It's like a puzzle game, essentially, that tells a interesting narrative about you sort of breaking out of a game. And it's broken apart into different chapters, and the chapters actually go through other styles of games, which are really interesting. Like, the first one is sort of a Sam and Max kind of detective thing. The second, like, well, I don't know what's the second one, but there's another one that comes down the line, which is very much like a Zelda game that you have to play, but it's sort of you interacting with Link, essentially, to play through the tropes and weirdness of it all. You have I'm trying to think of the other different formats of games.
So you have to like repopulate the houses full of pots before he comes back in?
Not so much like that. It's just it's like he's going through the kind of the questy type stuff that the game asks of you, right? Like you got to go get the sword, but there's all of this stuff in the way of you getting the sword, and you have to kind of manipulate the environment such that Link thinks he's doing it all. You know, but you're really the one that's like the invisible hand behind the scenes making it happen.
Oh, so it's like the Ada part of Resident Evil 4.
Oh, sure. Where like you realize like why stuff is scattered in the position that it's in when you play as Leon.
Yeah.
And
it's fun. It's all very much about manipulating the environment in ways that you wouldn't think you'd need to accomplish the task. And it ends in a, like, there comes this really interesting point where you sort of, because this game is so fourth wall meta-y that it sort of even breaks through what you would think that actual fourth wall is and gives you another kind of challenge in a different kind of way. I don't want to spoil anything in case anyone were to pick this up, because one, you should pick it up. It's not just me talking. I think this game's got like a high 80s rating on Metacritic. It's one of the most well-reviewed games so far for the Switch this year. Totally recommend it. Again, unless you really don't like puzzle games.
That's the case, fuck you.
Yeah, like, and that's I think the whole point of it is that this game is coming up with really interesting ways to give you games you've already played.
Hmm.
You know? So I really dug it. Totally worth checking out. Great sense of humor in it. So that's really all I've been playing. I've been playing more Streets of Rage, but that's like, you know, I'm sure we've talked about that one.
Nothing new to trade through there until they start doing all the other updates to add new characters.
Yeah.
Wes, how's Animal Crossing? One of us. You've joined the 35 million.
Kind of. I mean, it's
no, you own it.
Fine.
You joined.
I do own it, and I'm doing stuff. I'm just doing it slowly because it's not really holding my interest.
Yeah, there's no rush.
Running around, yeah, I get my fossils. Like, all right.
You should think of it as a therapeutic exercise. It's a game that you're not trying to, you know, like what would you say, like min max.
Yeah,
it's very much a game where you just kind of do what you want
to
do with it.
I just gotta hit a point. I'm like, I don't even know what to do right now. I'm just wandering around the island like an idiot. I'm like, all right. Well, I gotta build a bridge, I guess. Okay.
See if you can get through to the point where, you know, you actually have all of, like, the buildings and stuff that you need. Mm-hmm. Because there will be more stuff to do. This is gonna, like, sound really formulaic. There will be more stuff to do once you get all the stuff you can do.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Are you skipping days at all?
No. Well, yeah. But I'll skip a day here and there to, like, oh, I gotta build this thing, but I'm already done doing everything on my small island.
Yeah.
So just skip the day and get to the next stuff.
Do you have any other villagers yet?
I think I have three coming.
Three coming, okay. Have you got, like, the...
I just got the quest to build a bridge, and then he's gonna let me start putting where their houses are gonna go.
Okay, cool. Because, yeah, now you need to get a ladder so you can go up things, go up, and you can eventually be able to build ramps so you don't need ladders.
Mm-hmm.
What are the other? You have a fishing pole? Not a fishing pole, but
a vaulting pole.
A vaulting pole.
I got the vault pole.
Very good.
There is the island that I picked out does have one little section in the back that is higher, so I haven't been able to go up there yet, which drives me crazy because there's a bunch of weeds up there. I'm like, son of a bitch, get them off my island.
Go away, weeds.
Do you know the flower? Like, what's your native flower to your island?
I think it's the red one.
I think just about all of them have a red one.
I have no idea. Is it a rose or a tulip?
I think it's a rose. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't really know. I know my native fruit is oranges.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
So well, I got those. I have so many trees. I want them all gone.
He's gonna like chop them all down.
God, yeah. But
level
the
land.
I don't have the recipe to make an axe that way yet.
Yeah, you'll get there. And see that's the thing is it does lead you in very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you might get to a point where you play for a little while, but really, like, if you put in, you know, 20, 30 minutes a day, you'll make some progress. I mean, I still play every morning for about 15 or 20 minutes just to kind of, like, check in with some of the villagers that I like and maybe plant a new money tree. I'm just kind of, like, amassing wealth now. I'm not really doing anything with it.
So I did go to two islands with the thing you told me about with the...
Yeah, the raids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I did find two villager people there.
Sweet.
So I was like, all right, come to my island. One of them, I wasn't going to pick. It was some kind of, like, sheep lady. I was like, all right. And I didn't really want her. She, like, seemed fine. And I started talking to her. She's like, I'll just be here on my own on this island.
She reaches for a gun.
I was like, oh, shit. And so I had to invite her because for some odd reason, this fake person that doesn't exist, I felt guilty leaving.
Gotta be cold-blooded.
Shit. And the next island was a blue bullfrog named Jeremiah. I went, yeah, fuck yeah, you come to my island, buddy.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Let's go. Actually, that guy's awesome.
I have a guy on my island named Camo Frog. He's one of the frog skin guys, but he's got the camo.
I got Camo Frog, too.
Yeah, he's for real.
What a coinky dink.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
So I got Mott, which is some kind of lion with a school sweater on, who's all about fitness and running.
Yeah.
It's like, I got to get up there early and go running.
Because I have a lion on my island that's also very into fitness.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think it's one of those like traits that they have. Like, there's a handful of personalities. It's not just that there's genders assigned to them, what kind of animal they are, but that there are some underlying personality traits that kind of
There's maybe a couple dozen different personality traits that they could have.
I was watching a video on Animal Crossing just to see what kind of islands I can make, and one of them, they came across one of their villagers, and it was a sheep, but it was all dressed like a clown, and they kept making jokes about it. It's like murdering people and stuff like that, because it's creepy as fuck. I want that clown. I want this creepy guy to be my island. Keep everybody in check. I'll send the clown to your house to say hello.
But remember, you can also gift them stuff. And they'll wear what you gift them. If you.
Oh, yeah. That's so great.
I know I've done that with a bunch of my people on my island. Like, mm-hmm. I gave this one Audie. She's like a fox. But I gave her the Bruce Lee outfit, and she wears it all the time. So nice. She's walking around like with the Enter the Dragon yellow jumpsuit with the black dragon on it.
That's nice.
Yeah.
How many villagers can you get?
I think like 10 or 12, something like that.
Okay, so I got two, I got three coming. So there's like five more I can get.
There will be certain times where like if they're like walking around the island, like they'll thought bubble above their head and they'll tell you they want to move. And if you don't like them, you can let them. If you don't want them to move, you'll just kind of like say, nah, you should stay. And then they'll just be pumped about staying. But like I think it's like once a week you'll have a chance of like someone asking to move away. There are a couple that I would let leave.
Oh yeah, Graham, get the fuck off my island. I don't need you.
But there's no way to make them leave unless they ask.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
I also have Phoebe, which is some kind of bird.
Nice. Yeah.
But yeah, the only downside I had so far was I don't like where my buildings are laid out. Because I didn't realize that where they put the tents, that's where they're going to build the house. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just like, yeah, build the tent wherever the fuck you want. I don't care. Like,
yeah, you know, really I got have like a desire to arrange your island that early on.
Yeah. Like, I just wanted to get going. There's a lot of fucking talking. Holy hell. Mm. Like, you just want to do one little thing, and they had to, like, say three paragraphs. And you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Buy my weeds. Come on. Just come on. But so now they're, like, offset, and I have no, like, good idea about the layout where I want to put it. And so when I came to building the shop, I just threw it in the top corner. I was like, you just go fucking there out of the way. I don't know.
So now you gotta hop over three rivers to get to your shop.
Like, I don't know what to do. My layout is all fucked right now. I'm all upset about it. I built the museum literally next door to my house.
Mm.
Like, here's my house, and my museum's like almost touching walls with it. Like, all right, fuck, build there. I don't care.
You know what you actually might want to get? Because it makes the game so much smoother. Get a turbo controller.
Yeah.
There's a lot of. You're gonna find yourself spamming, like, the A action button a lot, or spamming, like, Y, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
I've personally found that when you have a turbo controller, it's so much better because, like, you could just knock everything to the ground and then just spend the next few minutes casually just kind of, like, sweeping through and picking everything up versus, like, spamming A the whole time while you're walking around.
Yeah.
There's lots of different...
And also, I was thinking about getting one of those Joy-Cons with the turbo stuff built in, those really big ones.
Yeah. Do it.
I haven't seen those.
Yeah, they're on Amazon. I was really tempted to, but I was like... I bring mine switch over here all the time and it wouldn't fit in the new case, so that means I would have to buy another case to accommodate for that. And I was like, I'm looking at like $70 for this. I'm like, fuck. Like,
yeah, and you're already going to be buying Skyward Sword.
So. Ah, you dick!
One other thing, if you see a lot of falling stars in the sky ever, if you're ever looking up at the sky at night, just jot that date down, because that date will always be a day in which stars fall.
Mm.
So what you can do, like I know I was doing this, is like set your character up in a spot where no one's going to interact with them, usually just facing the shore at the bottom of your island, southernmost point of your island. Have them look up at the background of the night, and then if you have that turbo controller to set on, let it run overnight. And then when you wake up the next morning, the entire island is going to be littered with these star fragments.
Oh, cool.
And those are sort of higher-end crafting items, like kind of some of the rarest stuff to get, because... Honestly, if you're just sitting there, you may only get a couple an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to actually hit the A button to actually, I think it's make a wish on the falling star. So if you want to, like, get a whole bunch all at once, that's
not really my switch on overnight, though. I mean,
No, you know. You got to sit there for, like, 3 hours and collect them individually, or we probably not get them at all.
Yeah, probably not get them at all.
Yeah. Again, you're not even there yet. You're kind of doing the beginning stuff, too.
Yeah.
You're sort of getting your feet wet with it.
You're still going to give me that clothes wand?
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
Does it come... Now, if you give me the wand and there's clothes in it, do I get those clothes, too?
No.
It's how you would take the wand to the dresser and then assign the outfit to
one. The outfit stay in the dresser.
You can get a dresser for your house. And the more you expand your house, the more, like, storage you will get. But like the dresser is a quick way to access the clothes in your storage.
Okay. Because I have no clothes right now. I got shoes randomly.
Okay.
And then today I got cracked sunglasses.
There you go.
I love those.
Well, there's going to be the Able Sisters. Mm-hmm. There's going to be these two characters that open up a clothing shop.
Yeah, I literally just saw Mabel because of my shop opened.
Yeah. I got a couple of games.
Yeah.
Were you about to say something, Wes?
No. I'm excited to find out what you can do in the game to decide what to do with my island.
Mm. I think John's got it right, though. Play it in, like, 25, 30-minute bursts.
Yeah.
Like, turn it on, play it for a little bit. If you want to cycle through a couple of days, I guess play it longer. But it's best experienced gradually. Slowly. Yeah, a little bit at a time, over time.
Or, you know, if you're trapped in your house for 3 months.
Yeah.
Like we were when the game came out.
As, yeah, everyone was that got so obsessed with it.
I got a couple of games. I downloaded and played through Oceanhorn, which is a game, a little indie game that came out like right near the Switch launch. A couple weeks ago, I just went to the bottom of my wish list, and a couple of the games were on sale, so I picked up Oceanhorn. I picked up for like $6 or $7. And this is a sort of take on a Zelda game, specifically Wind Waker, where there are different islands scattered throughout this ocean, and you sail to them, and there are dungeons that you go into and items within those dungeons that you collect that will make accessing different areas of the world easier, right down to like heart pieces and heart containers, shops with potions and things. Like, this is a very much a take on a Zelda formula. I think where it is, I guess, distinguishing itself is in like the way that you go to these different islands, and like the dungeons aren't just things that are like places that you go into. They're like extended out to like the outside of the island. It's a bit like Majora's Mask or Skyward Sword in that matter. It's like the dungeon, like there's not like this overworld, and then you find the dungeon and then you start your puzzle solving. The actual dungeon starts when you land on the island, because then you're figuring out, okay, how do I get into the entrance? And sometimes there will even be like things like keys and switches on the over and the outside of the dungeon that will help you get into the dungeon. And there'll be points where you leave the dungeon and have to do something in the outside. It's got this this really neat attention to detail and crafting when it comes to the sort of way of the dungeons aren't as limited like to the walls that they occupy. I think one of the shortcomings of the game is that at a certain point you start to figure out that none of the dungeons or overworlds really make too much use of the new tools that you get. Like, there are some that distinguish themselves, like, okay, now you can swim, so now you can go into the water and solve certain parts of this, but most of the dungeons are about, okay, pick up this thing, bring it here, slide these puzzles around, beat up this enemy to get a key, open a door. The items that you get bombs that work very much like Zelda bombs, and you get like a bow and arrow, which again works very much like Zelda. But they don't factor into your sort of dungeon progression as much as they would in a Zelda game. In a Zelda game, you know, you get your new item and it is crucial to the dungeon that you're in. It becomes like the key to that. And in a good Zelda game, it will also have uses, you know, in the overworld and in other dungeons. Whereas this game, it has very limited use of those new things that you get. They are useful for combat because, especially early on, they're more powerful than your gear, your sword, and your shield that you have. So, you know, keeping enemies at bay with bombs or arrows is just a more efficient way of playing. It does have this interesting level-up system, which is different from Zelda. Because, you know, in Zelda, you get, like, your bomb bag and your bigger quiver, so you can carry more bombs and arrows. But in Oceanhorn, the more enemies that you kill or treasure chests you open, you will gain experience, and you will level up, and leveling up will do things like allowing you to carry more bombs, carry more arrows. So you don't have to go and spend money or play mini-games to get these sort of upgrades. There's an economy to the game. Like, there is money that you can get and buy items. Things like an instant revive if you get KO'd. So like a fairy in a bottle. But there really aren't too many uses for that money, and it's not super generous with the amount of money that you get. By the time I got to the end of it, I had enough money to buy like the one heart container that you can buy, and then a little radar that will tell you if there's like secrets nearby. And then a couple of other odds and ends. But I wasn't, I never got to a point where I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to the shop and stock up on things. I was constantly trying to hoard the money to afford the more expensive heart container. The game is also slow. Like, the character movement is very plodding. There is, like, a dash, but it's based on a stamina meter, which is very limited. It's really only useful for, like, getting away from a group of enemies that are a bit overwhelming. It can use it as a retreat. Otherwise, it can be very annoying with how slowly your character is navigating all these environments. And it's not like there's, like, some intricate maze work or, like, avoiding pitfalls that you have to do that would make moving slowly to your benefit. It's just slow.
So, the game is called Oceanhorn.
Yes.
Uncharted Seas. You must spend almost all of your time on the water.
No, but that's really that's your traversal. You don't do any time, you don't spend any time charting either. Which give me that cartography. That's what I really want here.
Yeah. Are you a boat or a human?
You're a human. You do have a boat. And
is the boat alive?
No. Missed opportunity.
Missed opportunity. Oh,
is it Petey the tugboat or whatever?
So. And, you know, the ocean navigation is very simple. You climb into your boat, you know, your sea chart pops up, and you select your destination. And then you just kind of, like, it auto-sails there. And, you know, there are enemies that will pop up, little squids, and you shoot it with your cannon. You play, like, a little shooty game while you sail to the next spot. Never takes too long to sail anywhere, which I think is to the game's credit. But, yeah, we don't ever really get full control. Which, yeah, I didn't mind. Like, I didn't care if, like, all right, that's the island I want to go to next. Just go there. That way I never had to, like, pull up a map and make sure I didn't veer off course or anything. I knew I was just going to end up in the place I wanted to go to.
So there was a sequel.
There is. And our buddy on the Discord group, Jason, he's actually playing through the sequel right now.
Oh, yeah, it came out in October of last year.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard much about it. It is a different visual style. It's more, it's not like an isometric game. It's more like a polygonal action game, the way you would think of like a modern Zelda. And far from what Jason's been saying is that you do sail and you actually have to like control your boat the whole time. Other than that, not really too many contrast yet. But I haven't heard anything. He's still very early in it.
Yeah, I think if a game calls itself Oceanhorn, you should spend more time on the ocean. I'm just saying.
Mm. Was it the big bad, the Ganon of the game is a giant robotic bug, beetle type thing, like a monstrous robot, and its name is Oceanhorn. I'm not sure why. There was a story.
Does it have a big horn?
Maybe. I don't remember.
If you played a game Slugger, MLB All-Star, sponsored by Big League Chew, and you boot it up and it's a racing game.
Like a foot race? Like, yeah. You have to do that race? Like, I forget which team does it, but you have to race the guy in, like, the green man suit all across the
That would
the
be outfield. Even more related to baseball, though. That would actually be on at least a baseball field. That's not fair, though, man. You know, they find people wearing sandals who are, like, five beers in.
Yeah, they're wearing, like, jean shorts. They're not...
Right. They've been slamming nachos all day.
And the guy, actually, he's dressed like that the character that Sam Jackson voiced in The Incredible Frozone. Yeah. He's dressed like Frozone. And he's very fast. And I actually did see a video. I don't remember why I was watching these videos, but a kid beat him.
Yeah.
And, like, he was super pumped that somebody's actually able to outrace him. But he basically gives, like... the other person a head start, like a full length of one side of the outfield. And it's just funny to see, like, they're running as fast as they can, and then, like, they realize he's coming up right behind him.
Yeah, this guy's probably like a high school track star or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very fast. If it's the same guy every time, I have no way of knowing.
Could be.
Anyway, you guys got another game you want to tag in with anything?
Do you have a game?
No, go ahead.
I've been playing World of Warcraft.
No!
But I've been switched over and started playing Classic.
Okay.
So Classic is the original vanilla World of Warcraft.
Uh-huh.
They just came out with the first expansion, which was Burning Crusade. I haven't played it. I've been against it. I was like, I'm not touching this. It's going to be super tedious and irritating. I started playing it just for as a little whatever to do with Jeff, because I haven't been playing World of Warcraft because I'm burnt out of that.
Good.
I'm enjoying Classic. It's I didn't realize how watered down retail is. They call it retail. That's the regular latest expansion or regular World of Warcraft. And then they call the other one Classic. But retail is like, you level up and you hit a certain level and you get this ability. You know all your abilities that are coming. The professions are, who cares? It's really the stuff at the end of it you want. The stuff in the middle is meaningless. You just queue up for dungeons and just do dungeons over and over and over again to level. In Classic, you have to do quests and you have to run everywhere. And the stuff in the middle of the professions actually are helpful and you can use them. And your abilities, you have to go and buy your abilities when you hit a certain level for them. So you actually have to go to a trainer and learn the abilities. There's not a set list of abilities in this order you get. There's a talent tree for passives that you can unlock. And actually, there's points that you allot whenever you level. Like, it's much more
granular.
Stupid.
I hate you both. No, I like Classic.
I'm enjoying it. I don't mean to say like granular, like it's like pushing against you. It's more like you do one thing, then another thing. Instead of like getting everything all at once,
yeah,
you actually have to take these steps.
Yeah, and it's much more meaningful. And I get to see the actual world of the world. Because in the other game, I'm just sitting in Orgrimmar, which is the main hub area, and just queuing for dungeons over and over and over again. Now I'm actually going to the areas and exploring through them and doing quests and seeing what they actually put in the freaking game. Like, it feels like...
You know, what it sounds like is, like, the more that they iterated on this, they streamlined the things so you could more quickly to do your min-maxing.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, here's this thing that we've made. Go experience
it. I feel like I'm playing, like, a regular game now. Like, well, it's crazy.
It sounds like the difference, like, between playing Diablo 2 and Diablo 3. Another Blizzard property. Mm. Like, Diablo 3 is very much, like, the game starts when you hit level 70 max level. You know, like, yes. Most people are like, if you're doing it right, you'll spend 15 to 45 minutes getting from level 1 to level 70.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's really how the game is whenever there's a new
season. And then the game starts.
Yeah, and then you really get to start to dig into what you're going to do with your character.
Yeah.
Because none of those skills mean anything. It's not what you're going to end up doing with it. You're not going to be wearing any of your gear. But, like, again, in Diablo 2, there's meaningful stuff happening through every step of the game for your character. It's so much more about progression.
Yeah.
And about, really, like, every little item here or there could be a dream item, or every skill point can really change the way that your character plays. When you do a respec means a lot more, versus, like, Diablo 3 is just, like, everyone's in a permanent state of respec at all times.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's... I don't know. I can imagine for someone that's so deep in the weeds of playing World of Warcraft for so long, it probably is really fun to go back and just remember what it was like when it first started.
I wish the regular one was like this. I'm all for this. It's great. I feel like I'm playing a normal game instead of just getting to that max point and then doing the same thing over and over again in order to get the best gear. And then like, oh, now we can do raids. And they still have dungeons and raids, but you have to physically go to the dungeon, and there's no queue up where people just randomly get assigned with you and you guys just go to the dungeon. You have to physically go to the dungeon after you're saying in chat, hey, I'm looking for a healer. Is anybody want to come with us to this dungeon or this healer? And stuff like that. So it's a little bit more work to find people, or you can find a guild, which makes it, like, dungeons, the thing that you went through hundreds of times now, are more meaningful because you have to actually get people and, like, physically go there, and you can't just grind through it over and over again. It's, I don't know, the game just feels like a normal game now instead of just this grindy...
Can you move your content from Classic to the mainline?
No, because Classic ends at Burning Crusade, which was the first expansion.
Yeah.
And then now retail's like 5 or 6 expansions past that. So, I mean, it just goes up to Burning Crusade and then you're done.
World of Warcraft's got to be like a decade old, right? How old is it?
It's old. I don't know how old it is, but it's old. More than a decade.
I think we're closing on 2 decades.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about on the retro show one of these years.
That's true.
I mean, we are playing Classic, the original vanilla. So, I mean, I wish I started playing it sooner. This seems... Now I'm looking at different kinds of builds and stuff I can do with my passives.
I'm playing the same game, except I'm having fun.
Yeah, like, holy crap, what I do is actually meaningful. Like, it's... And I can
And even something as simple as the quest system. When you did a, when you selected a quest before, it popped up your map. You want to go to this area and kill this stuff. There's a big blue area, so you want to kill the stuff in this blue area. And then after you do that, a little icon pops up. You go and turn your quest in there. There's none of that shit. You have to actually read through the quest description and be like, oh, I have to go north of this area, and then just, like, go fucking looking for it. Like, it's... I had to figure it out, and it takes a second. Jeff downloaded an add-on, so it tells him and everything. I'm like, dude, no, we're not playing retail. Let's figure this shit out. Like, let's...
let's play the game.
Yeah, like, I feel like I play, like, a Skyrim or something. Like, I have to figure out what I'm supposed to do instead of the game just telling me... I'm in regular retail, it's literally just going here, then there. It's just
chasing
going
to points. Points.
Yeah, that's all I'm doing. But this, I'm... I have to actually put work into it. It's great.
I do have some bad news, though.
What's that?
Nothing you're doing is meaningful.
No, it isn't.
Nothing we're doing right now is meaningful.
Like, no.
We have a finite amount of time before the grave, and we're spending much of it on playing video games.
Now, until we crack this case on experiencing time in a linear fashion.
It's true.
I'm planning on getting over that hump at some point in my life. Okay. Well, if I do that, I will certainly bring you guys
along. Yeah, fill me in.
Yeah. I want to be one with your Switch. That's all I'm saying.
That is what yours.
We don't have to wait for you to crack the case for that.
Why do you have to make it so dark all of a sudden? You always bring back the grave and death. And
yeah. I think he lives in a state of existential dread that he maybe. Just buries down within himself. You know?
I should let it out more, is what you're saying. That's what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah, it's sort of a, you know, a crisis of faith of your own existence.
I mean, do you do this with your children? Like, you're cooking breakfast, like, here's your eggs, even though it doesn't matter, eventually you'll be worm food. Like, it's...
That's ridiculous, they don't eat eggs. I've been playing Shin Megami Tensei 3, which is a game about the world having already ended.
That's great.
Yeah.
We all die alone. This is great.
Somebody hold me.
Well, I haven't been paying too much attention to the narrative, which has gotten me into trouble. I'll get to that. But like the game, I talked really briefly about it on the official show because it was only a few hours in. But the game starts with you like meeting up with a couple of your friends at this hospital. You're there to meet up your teacher. She's there. I don't remember why. They couldn't find her, so you go wandering around trying to find your two friends who are supposed to meet you there. And then you do find your teacher, and she is part of this ritual that is essentially like... folds the world up in and of itself to where like everything exists within this one sphere, and that sphere is like the greater Tokyo area, and when you come to after this ritual, everyone is scattered. You've become part demon, which, you know, gives you all these powers in battle, allows you to recruit other demons in your party, and that's where you get to the crux of your gameplay in these Shin Megami Tensei games, where you're going around, you're fighting demons, you're adding them to their party, you're fusing them together to make new, more powerful demons, passing skills along, working on your demon team in order to take on your next boss and continue to move on. So the world has already ended, and you, at certain points, come across these characters that you knew before. You come across your two friends, the teacher, and then for whatever reason, every time you come across them, you all decide to go your separate ways. Like, these are the only people left alive that you know. Why is everyone just fucking off and deciding, like, I want to reshape the world in my own image? Like, this should be a time where you're like, hey, there's fucking demons everywhere. Maybe there's strength in numbers. Being the only humans left in existence.
I don't know why, but the Harley Quinn show just popped in my head after they take over Gotham and they make all the separate little eyes.
Yeah, yeah. So,
is that certainly what's happening here? Like, is that...
They give Bane the bad chair.
I just finished that show again. That's such a good show.
It was really good. So, I got to a point in the game where I was a bit stuck. There was one corridor, one tunnel that I was supposed to go down, but it was blocked off, and there's something I was supposed to do in order to remove the rubble in the way to get my way through, to move the fucking Psyduck, as it were. And I was going around, I was talking to every NPC, somebody fucking tell me what to do. I was consulting guides, and the guides were like, hey, make sure you do this, make sure you do this, make sure you do this. And I did all those things, and still it was in the way. And over the course of a couple of days, I must have spent like 3 hours just wandering around, like, why isn't this thing opening up? What the fuck is going on? Until I come across a group of NPCs that I had talked to before. I talked to them all again, and for all I know, they said the same thing. But then I decided to talk to them all a second time, because it's happened once before in the game where there's an NPC. You have to talk to them twice in order for them to point in the direction that you need to go. And there's another NPC at this point in the game where I had to talk to him twice, and he's like, "Oh yeah, remember that place before? I heard something was going to happen there." So the game was telling me to backtrack to a previous point in the game so I could watch a cutscene, and then I could go back to where I needed to be, and the path would have been cleared. So I did that, and I got real sad about it, because it's such like PS2 design bullshit where like you're just having me run around, talk to randos, and see a cutscene in a place that I left behind a long time ago. Why would you have me go all the way back there? Why can't I just move forward with the game? But other than that, it's been a pretty good time.
So, sounds like you're stealing a page from my book of my long list of complaints about Xenoblade.
Now, Xenoblade will at least put the exclamation points on the map.
Oh, thank God they do that.
Yeah. otherwise, I'd have probably been miserable there too. Like, wait, you want me to talk to somebody? There's 1,000 fucking people in this game.
What's your average runtime on this game? Like, have you looked that up? Like, what your
well minus version? The 3 hours you spent.
Minus the 3 hours. Wondering. I don't know. I'm getting conflicting things because some places are saying like 25 to 30 hours. Other places are saying like 60 hours. From the guide I consulted, it looks like I'm about 2/3 of the way.
Doc Brown age? He's either 45 or 80. Like, I don't...
Maybe. from the sort of, like, progress I was able to track when I consulted the guide, it looks like I'm about 2/3 of the way through the main story, and I have clocked about 28 hours. So...
25.
No, 28.
Yeah, but 3 hours was.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I mean, yeah, probably. You're probably right. But yeah, but I'll probably end up spending some time, because I still got a couple weeks before Mario Golf comes out, and that's kind of the window of time I want to use to finish this game off. So I'll probably spend a little bit of time, you know, grinding and working on some demons. Oh, I did, so in these Shin Megami Tensei games, you do eventually get your Pokedex, your compendium, as they call it, of demons that will show you like all the ones you've recruited before. When I previously talked about the game, it hadn't unlocked yet, so I thought there wasn't one in the game. It's just something that unlocks 6 hours in for some reason. But I was able to open that up, so I'm able to re-recruit demons that I had recruited before and try to fuse them together with new ones. That, of course, all costs money in the game, but I've gotten to a point where money isn't really... It's just kind of trivial at this point. So... I don't know how much time I'm going to... Like, I'm not going to like fill out the Pokedex. I'm not going to collect everything. But it is a way that I've been able to like track the progress of how many demons I've been able to acquire so far. And, you know, fusing these scenes together is the key to making your most powerful team. It's the key to most battles, is having your team spec'd out the right way, because bosses... Well, let me backtrack. The battle system in these games is typically... There is a weakness that your random encounter enemy has, maybe a couple of weaknesses. Exploiting that weakness will allow you to stack turns together and allow you to finish off battles before they even get a chance to attack you. So bosses in these games very rarely have actual weaknesses, so you have to spend at least the first couple of turns buffing up your own stats. To make things easier, you can buff up like your evasion, your attack, your defense, your magic, all this stuff. And I've found the most successful way to win these battles is spend. You have your four party system. Make sure that some, if not all, of my party members are able to do stat buffs and debuffs and just attack. Standard attacks don't really need to exploit any weaknesses with magic against these bosses. They don't have any weaknesses. So a lot of the boss fights have been playing out pretty much the same way. It's debuff, debuff, buff up for a couple of turns, and then just attack. Maybe heal a little bit here and there if you need to. Which, you know, that's something that I think the series improves on as it moves forward, and Persona as well, which is a spinoff of this series, improves on. Because it allows you to just have a little bit more fun with these battles rather than kind of repeating the same thing over and over again. It does make battles easier in the successive games in this series, because you do have those weaknesses you're able to exploit and like knock your enemy prone and do these big attacks. But I don't know. I'm playing the game on normal difficulty, and I'm not having too hard a time with it. I think there's only like two or three bosses that I've had to repeat a couple of times before I was able to, you know, set up my buffs correctly to win. I've heard that, you know, playing it on hard mode is very punishing, which tracks. That makes sense. But, you know, I don't think that just like the average person jumping into this RPG is going to have that difficult a time with it. Although, you know, if you're the average person looking for an RPG to jump into, don't think this is the series to do it.
What would be the series?
Like Final Fantasy. Or, dare I say, a Pokemon. It's a good RPG to jump into.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I mean, I like it. But like you said earlier, a bit of an enthusiast for this particular genre.
This is kind of a deep dive of a game, too.
Mm,
like, the initial release didn't sell more than 200, or it sold 350,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the remaster from, I guess, earlier this year.
Yeah, came out this year.
Sold like 250,000. So combined, this game has yet to sell a million copies.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That fucking, what was that game you were just talking about? The other one, about the ocean?
Oceanhorn.
Yeah, that has over a million downloads.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're probably a bit more accessible, probably like slash sales. But yeah, this is not like a mainstream RPG series. Like, I think like Shin Megami Tensei 4 and 4 Apocalypse were on the 3DS, and I would venture guess those were probably the best selling games in the series. But I think at this point, the Shin Megami Tensei mainline series has been eclipsed by the popularity of its spinoff, which is Persona.
Yeah,
which has probably sold multiple millions in its latest iteration.
Got good reviews when it came out, too, from what I'm seeing here.
Yeah, I can see this being a pretty well-regarded RPG at the time with like the enthusiast audience for these games. I think, you know, as far as like standing the test of time, you know, it's more of like an interesting relic than it is a really solid game. I'm having a good time with it, but I've, you know, made peace with the idea that most boss battles are probably going to play out the same, and that most corridors that I'm running through are going to look the same. It is very much a PS2 game. There's not a whole lot of detail in the environments.
Are you playing on PS2?
No, I'm playing on Switch.
Okay. Can I ask you a question?
Go for it.
Lucifer.
Yeah.
Is in this game. Have you seen him yet?
Not yet.
Ooh.
Not yet. Typically.
And is it the Lucifer? Is it like of?
Yes.
Oh, the fallen angel?
Typically. Like these Shin Megami Tensei games often take like deities from different faiths and mash them all together. Like Thor is in this game. I fought Thor already. Loki's in this game. Odin made a brief appearance. And there's also like
a lot of Norse mythology there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's also a lot of like Celtic mythology. There's some Hindu stuff in there as well, Christian stuff. Like Michael, the archangel, is in the game, as well as Gabriel. I'm not sure if he's in like this particular version, but he's been in Shin Megami Tensei games before, as well as Lucifer. And a few of these SMT games have branching endings, and some of them, if not most of them, end up with, you know, you trying to take down God. And that's the final boss. Yeah.
God's the final boss.
Yep.
So the divine creator.
Yep.
Just to undo all of existence.
Yep.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, apparently in Europe they called this game Lucifer's Call.
Okay.
We had it changed to Nocturne.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe Lucifer's Call was still a little bit too iconic at the time, even though it was like a mid-2000s release. Mm. But yeah. You guys got any of that's Shin Megami Tensei. I like it. I don't know if I fully recommend it to someone who's not sort of familiar with the series already, but that's what I got.
Mm.
Yeah, any games, Ryan?
I have no more games to discuss.
How was A Quiet Place 2?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were going to see it. I wanted to, but I have not seen it yet.
No. Yeah.
The original was, or the first one was great. So, yeah, I have yet to venture out into the theaters. I really want to. Because it's probably a pretty good set of movies right now if you like horror films, because that's out, and that new Conjuring film.
Oh, sure.
Out, so, I like those. Those are good.
Oh, you know, I have, I think that's available on HBO Max. I have to go to the theater.
Yeah. The last movie I watched was one called In the Loop. It's a British series or British movie that came out about, what would you say? It's had a hard to describe. It's sort of like, imagine if Aaron Sorkin and Christopher Guest made a movie together.
Oh, wow.
It's a very, very fast-talking political drama with just this sort of wit and absurdity that comes from, like, that very dry wit and absurdity that comes from a Christopher Guest film.
Right.
And it's basically about some British politicians and some American politicians trying to control the narrative in the media about an impending war that America may be wanting to start. It's good. I loved it. I don't know a lot of the... It's a lot of British actors, so I don't know all the cast that well. One of them is a guy named Peter Capaldi, mm-hmm. who has been a doctor recently, yeah. one of the Doctor Who doctors.
The 12th.
Yeah.
Nerd.
No, is he? Yeah, James Gandolfini's in it as well. He plays an American general. And Gandolfini and him and Peter Capaldi light the movie up. They are fucking incredible. They're so good. It's just really, really fun. It's one of those ones where it's just like you kind of just get into it, and then it has these laugh out loud moments that you just don't expect or don't really see coming, because a lot of it is so serious, and what they're talking about is so fucking serious. And then there's never like gaffes or pratfalls or slapstick. It's all dialogue driven. So a lot of people, I could imagine, watch it and get to what amounts to something like a Doctor Strangelove. You know, where Doctor Strangelove has that very sinister sense of humor for what is essentially the impending nuclear apocalypse is a comedy about it. And so in the same way, this is very much a... and it came out in 2009. So it came out in 2009, which puts it 6 years after what is like the longest war in American history already. And, you know, we're going to be doing it for like another...
Still happening.
10 years.
Yep.
Right, so I guess at the time they didn't realize, because that's essentially what it is about. It's about a bunch of defense secretary insiders, not actual military members, but wanting to kind of gin up a war, kind of wanting to go into a hot war, and then a bunch of British politicians then wondering to what degree do they want to be involved in this whole thing.
What was it called?
In the Loop. I love it. It's a great movie. But again, it's very dry, very dialogue driven. So if you're expecting, slapstick or just like kind of physical humor, it doesn't really give you that. But again, if you're a fan of like those like fast talking political stuff, if you were maybe a fan of a show like House of Cards or something, you'd probably love this. Or Veep as well. Really, really good. So 100% recommend that.
Mm.
I actually got two movies. One I'm going to touch extremely briefly on.
Is there?
Is it The Patriot?
No, it's not The Patriot. No, it's not the retro show yet.
Right.
I was staying at my mom's house because, you know, when her husband goes out of town, she hates staying by herself. So I go and keep her company. But sitting here looking for movies to watch, and I couldn't find anything. And then eventually came across, this hurt me to watch, but she was like, let's watch that. I'm like... fine, because we're looking for a movie for like 15 minutes. I was like, fuck it, whatever. So I sat through Next with Nicolas Cage.
Oh, wow.
Where he sees 2 minutes into his future. God, that's a train wreck of a movie. How does he find work? I don't...
Well, he has to. Court order. Oh,
my God. Have you guys seen this thing?
No.
I have not.
What's the premise? He's precognitive, but it's like 2 minutes?
He can see 2 minutes into his own future.
Okay.
And so the government is after him the government's after him because they want him...
Right, because the government just goes after people. That's what they do.
To find a nuclear warhead that was stolen. But he only sees 2 minutes in his future, and so they like... I don't know. Is this whole thing of him avoiding them the entire time, and then eventually he lets them catch him? But it's a very, very weird premise, and there's this girl involved.
Russian terrorists are detonating a nuclear weapon?
Yeah. Yeah.
Co-starring Julianne Moore and Jessica Biel.
Yeah.
So, has he always had these powers?
Apparently, yes.
How, like, what was he doing for a living?
He was a stage magician in New Vegas. Do Vegas
because like if you can see like 2 minutes into your future, I think you absolutely like go into like professional baseball because you can see what pitch is coming.
Oh, there you go. But there's this moment where he, like...
Play for the Astros.
I'm going to spoil the crap out of this movie because it's garbage and nobody should watch this. But there's a moment that after he just made the love with Jessica Biel.
Made the love?
Made the love. That he wakes up and looks up in the ceiling, and then they go on the series of events where he lets them catch him, and Jessica Biel gets captured by the bad guys. She's
like 20 years younger than him.
She gets captured by the bad guys, and he goes and saves them, and then he goes, oh no, I was wrong. And then the nuke goes off and everybody dies, and then he wakes up again in the bed. And
after he made the love?
Right after he made the love. And you're like, holy crap, this is one of those movies where the character goes into a coma, and then the entire movie is what happens in it, and then he wakes up, and everything that happened does not matter.
So he made the love at the beginning of the movie?
It was kind of like midway through.
So
the second half of the movie just doesn't matter because it got wiped out instantly. And then it ends with him going off to go stop the nuke. I'm like, what the fuck did I just sit through?
So it turns out he's more precognitive than he realized.
With Jessica Biel's character. There's this thing set up with that through the whole movie about him looking for this girl and whatever.
So she augments his powers?
I don't know.
She's asleep after they've made the love.
After they made the love.
So was it? Did you actually have to watch sex scenes with your mom?
No, there was no sex scenes.
Okay.
I would not watch a movie like that with my mom. I'm like, nope, I'm going to skip that.
You don't know what you're getting into with this movie, though.
Nope.
By the way, Lee Tamahori made this film in 2007, fresh off of the heels of Die Another Day and XXX State of the Union.
Oh, jeez.
Didn't even make the first XXX movie. Just going right in there with the State of the Union.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Ice Cube is attached. How do you not make that movie? I'm not being facetious. Like... If you have a chance to make a movie with Ice Cube, you absolutely do it.
Oh, get this. A year before this movie came out, right? So in January 2006, Tamahori, the director of this film, was arrested on Santa Monica Boulevard when, according to LA police officers, he entered an undercover policeman's car while wearing a woman's dress and offered to perform sex act in exchange for money.
The director of the movie did this?
The fucking director of this, yes.
Where is this person now?
Wow.
Jail.
Making most recently Mahana, a movie in New Zealand. So I guess, we sent him back to New Zealand. We want nothing to do with him. After we let him make the film Next, though. And I bet you that's why Nicolas Cage signed on. He's like, this guy's fucking insane, of course.
It's just, it was bad. It was real bad. The second movie was okay. And it was called An Inspector Calls. And it had the... I don't know the guy's name. He played Ares in Wonder Woman, and he was the one guy in Harry Potter, the
werewolf David guy. Lewis.
Yeah,
he was Lupin.
Yeah, Lupin.
Yeah,
this was an okay movie. It wasn't bad.
That's a very proper hat.
Yeah,
man has.
It takes place during 1912.
The fucker is British.
And the premise of this inspector goes to this house, asks questions because this girl just committed suicide. And it goes on with his this family and how each of them have interacted with this one girl and just ruined her life slowly but surely. And so the entire thing is you realize that pretty much the whole family is responsible for this one girl committing suicide, but none of them knew each other had interactions with this girl. Like the dad fired her because of she led a strike in order to get a higher wage. The daughter got her fired at her next job because she was in a bad mood or something. Little things like that.
This was in 1912?
The movie takes place in 1912.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was an interesting movie. And then it had like this weird thing at the end of it that just... I still don't really fully grasp it because I can't really understand why they went this way at the end.
She was alive the whole time. She had just like been in bed with Jessica Biel and like... saw the future.
No, I'll spoil this one too.
Okay.
But essentially, the inspector leaves, not doing any arresting or anything. He pretty much just saying, you all just ruined this girl's life. Shame on you or whatever, and leaves. And then the family is like, wait a second. And then they check, and there hasn't been a girl suicide yet that night. And they're like, this guy was fake. There's no new inspector. They haven't heard of him. And then it goes through the scenes of watching the girl killing herself, so she hasn't killed herself yet. And the inspector was like some kind of spirit or something? I don't fucking understand. It was weird. I don't know. They just went a completely weird way at the end that I wasn't fully understanding. And then it ends with them getting a call like a girl just killed herself, and then everybody just stops and just... I don't know what I watched at the end of it. It was okay, though. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Fine.
So it sounds like you watched two movies where they were like writing the script as they were shooting.
Yeah, pretty much. But he did a good performance. I like that actor.
Do you get the sense that there was any commentary about World War I?
Nope.
Because it says that that's what this is supposed to be about, I guess.
Yeah.
Because if it's set in 1912, World War I really kicks off.
I mean, some World War stuff pops up, but nothing really. Like, there's never... None of them are affected by the war or anything. It's...
I'm fascinated by the time frame, because clearly this is like a British movie. I'm not sure how British politics worked at the turn of the 20th century. But, like, in the U.S., like... Women weren't in a workforce. They weren't unionizing. They couldn't vote.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe they were. I wouldn't be all that shocked to find out that England was more progressive at the turn of the 20th century, but.
Do they give you a day at which this occurred? I just have curiosity because the Titanic also sunk April 15th of 1912.
Oh, God. All right. It's just about this family and this one girl. Like, that's all it is.
The Titanic maliciously attacked an iceberg.
Yeah, I think well, what you're meant to say. Technically, it's not even the Titanic because there were two ships, and they switched the ships so that they could collect the insurance money.
Of course they did.
But they did leave that one old lady's necklace on the other one.
They had to.
Oh, wait, no. She threw it in the sea afterwards. Never mind. She had it.
Maybe
that joke made no sense. That joke got away from me.
It didn't. It's fine.
And I like that at the very end when she dies and she's going to heaven and sees everyone. It's like, you know, she first and foremost is greeted by some teenage boy she hooked up with on a boat like 80 years prior.
Yeah.
That door was big enough for the both of them. There was plenty of space for that door with her.
So, she sees everyone's like, but we still make all the Irish sit in lower class, right? Here in the afterlife.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Where are we going with this? Oh, yeah, you watch movies. That was it.
Yeah, it feels weird.
Anything else we need to address here?
I think we're good. I mean, basketball's happening. The playoffs are happening right now.
How's that going?
It's fun. We're actually getting into the conference semifinals right now. Mm. So, some interesting shakeups. The Lakers got bounced. They're out. The Suns beat them. Who's still in it? I know Utah's in it. The East looks pretty one-sided right now because the Nets are playing Bucks, and the Nets I don't know what the score is, if it's over yet. Oh, the Bucks came back and won. A very defensive 86-83 game. The Bucks beat the Nets.
That's pretty low scoring.
Yeah, I think the Nets are probably going to take it in the East, and probably the whole thing. Like, they're just too fucking good. Yeah, they've got KD and Kyrie Irving and James Harden, so they're kind of stacked. Then in the West, it's kind of up for grabs because, like, Utah looks really good. Suns look really good. Denver's got a solid team. But I think they're behind in their series. The Clippers are, like, this cardiac team. They took out Dallas in a Game 7, which is wild. There's this guy, Luka Doncic, who's really kind of lighting the league up. He's only 22 years old. And he's, I want to say he's from Slovenia. He is just absolutely incredible. He's just really, really talented. And he's only played in two playoff series. I mean, he's 22, so he's basically had two chances too. And it's always been against the Clippers. And he's averaging like a triple-double against the Clippers in the playoffs. It's just funny that he has had to face the same team twice. You know, and he's taken them 14 games, you know? Like, both games went to seven games to finish the series. Like, it's just funny. Oh, and you were talking about earlier about, like, we were making fun of, is it Abreu? The guy that wouldn't take his shirt off when he was rounding?
Atreyu?
Or no, not Bobby Abreu.
It might have been.
The Astros player that wouldn't take his. There was a really funny moment where Luka wouldn't take his jersey off because this guy, Paul George, who plays on the Clippers, wanted to do a jersey exchange thing. You know, that happens in sports all the time.
Yeah.
But Luka wouldn't take his shirt off because he might be a little pudgy. He's like, and he just didn't want to be body shamed because he's kind of a pasty white European guy.
Poor guy.
And he's not the fittest looking dude in the world. So he's probably like,
but he's good at basketball.
He's like, same time, you play basketball and make millions of dollars. I don't give a crap what I look like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe he's just an insecure 22 year old.
I get a tattoo of Rosie O'Donnell on my chest. I don't give a fuck at this point. I'm making bank.
I can sympathize with the guy because he's also probably playing the same court as guys like fucking LeBron James. You know, like these guys are like totally fucking ripped. So, you know, he's constantly like surrounded by like these super athletes, and he's just a little self-conscious about his body. Fuck you, Wes. Fuck you.
That was the top comment I saw. Someone was like, "Oh, Luke is just like us. He swims with his shirt on." I love it. But he still ended up giving his jersey to the other guy.
He don't want to get sunburned.
Yeah, precisely.
That's all it is.
On the indoor court.
No, but he's swimming.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, he still did end up doing the jersey exchange. He just did it when he was back in the locker room.
Mm.
So yeah.
He had to go get another shirt.
It's funny, like, yeah, he's incredible.
He like takes off the jersey and there's a sweater underneath.
The turtleneck and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and the MVP of this of the league this year just got announced, and it's Nikola Jokic, who's also an Eastern European guy who is big and pasty. He's the center. And by the way, a center hasn't won the MVP in 20 years. I think Shaq was the last one to win it, which is wild to think that it's been 20 years since a player was so dominant that they were MVP at center. Like, think of Dwight Howard. Like, Dwight Howard's prime years, he was totally unstoppable. He was getting, like, 25 points and 15 rebounds a night. That's crazy. And he never won an MVP, you know? So now you got this like 7'3" kind of chunko who's just slinging a basketball around like he's fucking Magic Johnson. Like it's crazy. It's really fun to watch him play. And yeah, he plays like a center. He's just a big meatball that he goes out there and pushes people around. It's really funny.
How come now that Shaq isn't playing basketball that I'm seeing more Shaq than ever? He's fucking everywhere.
He's got to make that money.
Oh, it's two things. Well, he actually is on it Inside the NBA on TNT, which is like the halftime show, post-game show.
Okay.
And he will hawk, you are right, he will sell anything. He will hawk anything. It doesn't matter what it is. He will sell you everything from Icy Hot to sodas to insurance. Like, he doesn't care. As long as he gets a paycheck, he will sell you literally anything.
Do you mean to offer him like $20 to promote the podcast?
Probably. I mean, that's the thing.
Just to mention us once.
We just gotta get in touch with Shaq.
You gotta have the money. We'd probably be more likely to get Kenny the Jet Smith. Also on Inside the NBA on TNT. Because it's him and this guy Ernie Johnson and Chuck, of course, Chuck. Charles Barkley. Oh, I love basketball. Yeah.
Just every single time I watch this show, there's like three Shaq commercials in the middle.
Yeah, he's selling like muscle relaxants, car insurance, and like catheters or whatever.
He's on Domino's commercials lately about stuffed pizza.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what the hell?
Oh, he did a Frosted Flakes commercial. I only know that because of the John Oliver show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's just fucking everywhere, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, so, that's all I got.
And I would like to also say one last thing about basketball.
Sure.
I am against LeBron James being in the new Space Jam movie. I don't know why. But I'm just not okay with this.
It's for children.
It's LeBron James, I understand. He's like one of the best basketball players that ever lived. But, I mean, it's LeBron James.
He changed his number to number 6.
Okay.
Because, you know, Jordan was 23.
Okay.
In Space Jam.
Right.
Oh, God. He can't be 23, and that's his number, too.
Did like Jordan have like exclusive rights over having the number 23 in Space Jam?
Or he just didn't want to get associated with it? Or?
I think it's just bad form. I think it's bad form to try to make the sequel to like a 20-year-old movie that had the greatest of all time, and you want to be the greatest of all time, and you tattooed yourself the fucking Chosen One across your fucking back. You know, and then you're stealing this guy's number, even though it's like
I'm still gonna watch the movie, but still, I'm not okay with this.
Why are you gonna watch it?
It's a Space Jam. Come on.
Oh, and for what it's worth, LeBron did at one point wear number 6. He wore 6 when he was in Miami with the Heat.
Mm.
Yeah.
I hope Bill Murray makes another appearance.
Somebody actually broke down the box score from that game, and it is kind of absurd. I think someone's got like 24 assists, but no other stat. Just like this montage of somebody
pass the ball every time we touch it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think, that's another one. Bill Murray's got like he played for 2 minutes and has one assist. Like, that's his stat line for the game.
Yeah, because he gets leveled out.
And Jordan just put up absurd numbers. He was like 24 for 30 or something like that. And just, yeah.
What a dumb movie.
I don't know why they're bothering to do it. Like, really.
For the kids.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. But children. I don't know. Michael Jordan just feels different than LeBron. Like, is LeBron really the pop culture icon? Like, Jordan was like a god. Jordan was like a god. People didn't think he was human. Like, he was McDonald's commercials. He was a Wheaties, you know.
Lay's potato chips.
Yeah. Games. Right. His ballpark shoe tracks. Brand is like, is fucking massive. Like, Air Jordans are the biggest shoe in the world. And that's all because of him. Like, I mean, LeBron is a huge marketable guy.
But he's a brand.
But it's like, Jordan's like out of his stratosphere. Yeah,
Jordan didn't even act in Space Jam. He didn't fucking need to.
I wonder what the difference is, though, because like...
He's just red lines.
They're comparable in that they are the best basketball players of their time.
Yes.
They both, you know, do all like the like endorsements and build a brand. I don't know, maybe Jordan wasn't trying to build a brand, so it just kind of like evolved more organically, where it seems like LeBron has been about, you know, making the LeBron James brand, sort of mythology around himself. Not there's anything wrong with that. If that's what you want to do, go for it.
Yeah. I also think that we think of Jordan as a winner.
Mm.
And we think of LeBron as, you know, like a more complicated individual, and winner does not come. I mean, he is a winner, and he's won like five titles, I think. We're going to four maybe. You know, and he's done it on three different teams. He's got all these crazy accomplishments. He's going to have like he's played, I think, 266 playoff games, which is just absurd considering that, like, you know, the eighth place guy on the list has probably only played like 100 playoff games. Like, it's just, he's going to have every meaningful stat in the same way that Tom Brady has every meaningful stat.
A crazy athlete.
But, like, you know, Jordan also has two three-peats. He had three titles, took a year off to play baseball for some reasons.
That's the other thing, like, there is, like, that sort of, like, side-eye, like, wait, what was really going on here? Yeah, like, attached to Jordan's legacy, but it doesn't really seem to undermine anything.
Yeah, because he came back and he won three more titles in a row, and then retired again. So it's sort of like a switch he could have turned on and off, and he was just always going to be this thing. And, you know, LeBron's, you know, lost more finals than he's won. He's been in, like, freaking... And again, that's a huge achievement, that he's been in, like, 12 NBA finals.
Let's not forget that he didn't win immediately after he came back. Nick Anderson stole the ball.
Oh, true.
So...
Yes. Oh, Orlando.
Yep.
And in Orlando also...
There were those 2 years, man. There were those 2 years.
There is a famous playoff half-court shot that he made against... that LeBron made against Orlando to win the game. But that was also a series in which he ultimately lost to Orlando 4-2.
Hmm.
That was the one where we were on our finals run, and we ended up losing to Kobe. We disrupted that whole thing. They run it so badly for it to be a Kobe versus LeBron thing, and then it ended up being a Dwight Howard versus Kobe and a 4-1 gentleman's sweep.
Hmm.
I digress. Yeah, no, I just think, I don't know, it's like comparing, who would it be? It would be like if you took Tiger Woods and then had Roy McIlroy. You know, like, I don't know who's like, Tiger Woods is just sort of monolithic in golf. It's not like really take anymore. The second best guy.
Not really anymore, though.
Yeah, but like at his prime, at his prime, peak,
yeah,
peak Tiger,
yeah, peak Tiger
was bigger than the sport.
Yeah,
same with like Serena Williams. Like, Serena Williams is not at her prime right now, but she's bigger than all of women's tennis.
Yeah,
so that's what. I mean, at least as someone growing up in the 90s, that's what Jordan felt like to me.
Yeah. Yeah, that is interesting. Like, they become bigger than the sport they're playing. It seems like LeBron James never really achieved that.
Yeah.
Not that he's out of time, but...
It's also that he's so cravenly... not cravenly, that's not the right word. So crassly wanted it. He's wanted to be that. Mm. You know, with his witness brand and his chosen one stuff. It's sort of like saying, no, I am that thing. And he has... He's proven it over and over and over again, but because he says that, it also means that people can critic. Can be any critic can say, no, you didn't achieve that because you still haven't done what Jordan's done, or you haven't done what Magic's done, or like what Larry Bird's done. I guess you could go after him. You know, it's what Bill Russell's got 11 rings.
Mm-hmm.
Someone could just say Bill Russell's the best because he has 11 rings. You know, go collect 7 more, and then we'll talk about you being the best.
You'd be like a 47-year-old man,
right? You know, you kind of open yourself up for criticism, so it's whatever. He'll be like, he's like Peyton Manning. You know, Peyton Manning, I mean, if not for Tom Brady's, people realizing Tom Brady will never die, I think Peyton Manning was sort of like the prototypical ultimate quarterback of all time, and he was going to have like every career stat ever for completions, touchdown passes, yards, all that, games played, all that shit. And then, of course, Tom Brady just decided to play it 7 more years than anyone thought he was going to, at an elite level. But like Peyton Manning is kind of like the LeBron. LeBron is like the prototypical NBA guy. If you were just manufacturing a laboratory of basketball player, you would make a guy that looks like LeBron James.
And there's like so many like really great players that just had the rotten luck of having to play at the same time as Michael Jordan. Guys like Charles Barkley and Reggie Miller and Patrick Ewing and all these guys. John Stockton.
Yeah. John Stockton. Yeah. That's tough.
Yeah.
I guess that's all that I'm saying, really. It's just that, you know, LeBron is like the greatest NBA player. He's never been a media personality like the previous star of Space Jam was.
Hmm.
He's probably on par, though, with the star of Kazam. He's like Shaquille.
I think we're done here.
Yeah.
I think we're done here.
I think so.
Okay. Next up, we're pulling a little bit of an audible. Nintendo is doing their E3 presentation on Tuesday the 15th, so the next show that we do will be probably based entirely on that, and then we'll skip over to the retro show after that and kind of realign things as we move into July. Oh, the retro show is going to be good. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
E3 is going to be good, too. I'm excited for that, too.
Yeah, we get to see the Switch Pro.
Allegedly. Yeah, we'll see. Okay. Place your bets now. But yeah, that's it. That's the end. Till next time.
So long.
Hasta luego.